following program is brought to you in living color.
It's just the sort of nonsense that helps perpetuate all this awful snobbery about wine. Isn't it a shame that this wonderful stuff, wine, can be a source of one human being feeling inferior or superior to another? I like big, in-your-face, tannic reds, and that makes me a superior and special kind of person. I mean, please, but the only purpose of this wonderful stuff is to give us enjoyment.
It's The Wine Crush, the show that's all about the grape. And now, here's your vintage host, Laura Lawson.
Sounds like fun.
So she's probably paid to say that.
Welcome to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, your favorite Chardonnay guzzling diva, and you are listening to the show that's all about the grape and all its glory, all the vine, all the time, everything you ever wanted to know about wine and were afraid to ask. That's what we are here for. We are your media resource for about our hopping off the vine into our vats grapes.
Yes.
Yes, it is finally officially that time of year, all up and down our western coast. And for me, that only means one thing.
What?
It's fall.
Well, it is.
No, people have different determinations. Now, I'm a good born and bred Southern girl. I know that will take so many people by surprise after listening to this show. But ultimately, for me, the end of summer is supposed to be declared Labor Day and you put your white pants up.
Pretty much.
But if you look around the country, it's interesting to hear what people's perception of when fall is. I mean, even though it is after Labor Day, in theory, it's fall in the Southeast. It is still clocking in at 99 degrees. I know there's snow up in some northern reaches right now. So what does dictate fall? That's why I think universally the concept of harvest is what should be accepted.
Well, I like that, but what's wrong with using an actual calendar? I mean, September 20th, 20-something, you know, 21st, that's fall. Why don't we just look at a calendar?
By the numbers, it's fall.
According to your definition, it's fall right now.
But see,
it's not really so.
No, I'm arguing that by how I was born and bred. Yes, right now it is in theory fall because
well, they didn't
Labor
have
Day.
Calendars where you grew up.
Aren't you precious? I know now why I keep you around and why I love you so much. But ultimately, no, it's just. Fall to me is sweaters and the smell of leaf smoke in the air and college football.
Well.
So there, that is my definition
of
fall.
I got you, but we're not there yet.
No. So
there's no smoke in the air. There's no sweaters. I'm not going to wear a sweater today. Though I did see someone wearing a sweater, and I thought to myself, they think it's fall, and it's not.
No, they probably work in this building and have to work in this studio, and that's why they have a sweater. All right. Anyway, believe it or not, the theme for today is going to be a clever show, and that's all being dictated by our great guest. Today we've got Michael Keenan coming back to join us. I absolutely love this man. I love his wines. I think he's clever. I think he's creative. His dad, Robert Keenan, was a brilliant people. And just all the way around, it's great to have them being part of the show and coming back in. Or Michael, rather.
Yes.
You don't remember this. He was one of your favorite guests.
I'm trying to remember.
He does Mailbox Merlot.
Oh, yes, I do remember that.
So
it's been a couple of years, at least.
For our listeners, I promised Michael the next time we spoke I wouldn't bring this up again. But one of the things that you think about when you buy your bottles of wine and how labeling works and how laws works, the Merlot they make comes from the Mailbox Vineyard. And there were some problems with Mailbox Vineyard. And so they just decided they always wanted the best to go into Mailbox. And because of that, well, all of a sudden, one vineyard was in decline. The other one was coming onto line, so to speak. So to dictate Mailbox Merlot, they took a bucket, they put concrete in it, they put a mailbox post into said bucket with concrete and put the mailbox in there. The mailbox is now mobile.
Oh.
So Mailbox Merlot comes from the Mailbox Vineyard.
All right.
Mailbox Vineyard tends to wander around. I love that. I think it's brilliant. Now, there are some people out there that might think that's a bit subversive. I am not one of them.
Now, how does Mailbox Vineyard work?
What do you mean, how does it work?
I mean, Mailbox Merlot.
Usually with a corkscrew.
Oh, I thought this was a whole system of getting wine to you.
No.
I thought
no,
it was, no, okay, no. Was, I'm thinking of a different discussion then. We ran into all kinds of different state laws and all that stuff.
So. Yes. Okay. How about this? There are certain states where you cannot get Mailbox Merlot in your mailbox. Yes.
That I remember.
Does that tie it all together for you?
That ties it together. God help us. That's it, yes.
All right, so I guess we have to officially determine fall, but I do want to know what you think, what your traditions are, and how things change for you now that we look at a calendar, we have harvest, it's after, however you want to declare that it is not summer anymore. 877-4CRUSH-1 or email me, lauralawson@winecrush.com. One last thing on Michael, he is joining us today. He has a quote that I'm going to see what he says about, but it might be one of the best quotes I've seen. Again, clever. Being treated like a conquering hero, not being treated like that at home, is how he perceives things. So I thought you'd appreciate and get into that.
Been there.
All right. So now that summer's over, we have done all kind of our Nielsen's. We have done all kind of reporting. We've looked at it, and it's official. Rosé beats reds as the fastest growing wine category in the United States. So definitely people thought pink. Definitely pink was what was consumed, and it's beating out our red blends. But does that change? That's what I want to know.
Yes.
Is it going to be seasonal? Now, I have to admit, no one was really drinking rosé last Christmas. Traditionally, rosé was something that you served Thanksgiving. That's when I always officially, formally poured it. It was great with turkey. It was great with all the stuffings. It was great with all the different things. Plus, we started drinking early for Thanksgiving because we eat about 1 o'clock. Perfect midday thing. Is everyone going to put their rosé on the shelf? Or are they going to go to something different? I want to know what we're going to go to and why. Now, going to things is always unique. And you know me. I love these studies. I love getting into them. But something I want to take a look at today is we're going to put this behind us, but let's go ahead and get some facts straight. First and foremost, America is now the number one nation in the world as far as wine consumption. It has been growing every year since 1986. Drink more wine, drink more wine, drink more wine, drink more wine.
And we're doing it.
And we are doing it. But what's interesting is that where and how we're drinking it has changed. It used to be we were consuming this wine at restaurants. And we have discussed this as much as we've discussed labels on the show. But restaurant sales are falling. They're down 4%. So people are no longer drinking their wines in restaurants. So they're drinking at grocery stores. They're drinking home. They're drinking on the couch. Finally, even though we've known this for about 18 months, there have been two different studies to put together why we're not drinking at restaurants anymore. So one of them looks at the extremes of things about craft cocktails and what's going into that. And the other looks into bad restaurant habits.
Oh, here we go.
And these are great. But I do want to, before we get into that, you know, one thing, you go out, everyone's putting all the time and effort into their craft cocktails. I'm just as guilty. I have found some really interesting things. But now in California, the cannabis cocktail trend is gaining momentum.
Where else but California?
Yes, this is coming from, this whole article is done by Lucy Shaw, and it's from Drinks Business. But ultimately, there's a restaurant, Madison on Park in San Diego, has added a cannabis-laced cocktail. Now, I don't know this stuff that well. I'll go ahead and admit that. I get in enough trouble with alcohol. But apparently, as they're doing a drink, it's called the Mr. Nice Guy. And for $18, you can go in and get a drink that has mezcal, cannabidiol oil, matcha, M-A-T-C-H-A, pineapple, coconut milk, and lime.
All right.
And the creator has
two of the ingredients I'm familiar with.
Well, apparently, the cannabidiol oil is the non-psychoactive part of the cannabis plant.
All right. Figured that.
And so I guess that means, does that mean it's legal?
That's, you know, that would be a gray area. I would think
if it's the non-psychoactive part, if it's not the stuff that gets you high, is it legal? But anyway, it says it adds a mellowness to the drink, but that we're starting to see all these unique ingredients go in, and this is definitely what's happening in California. So this is something that kind of we're going to use to springboard. We've got people who are crafting these amazing cocktails, whether they have smoke in a glass, whether they literally have cannabis in a glass, mint, jalapenos, stuff out of the garden. You know, all of a sudden, everything that we used to think of as garnish is now fully being used as a beverage. And they're going to get $18 for this cocktail. And people are buying
them. They're buying it up, aren't they?
Well, this is what goes into why people are drinking less wine in restaurants. If you went into your favorite watering hole, let's say 5 years ago, the most expensive thing, unless you were going to get into the single malt scotches, was going typically to be the high-end Cabernet by the glass or the high-end Meritage by
the glass. Absolutely,
yeah. And people would go in and they'd pay $18 for a glass of Cabernet. I was at a national restaurant chain last night for dinner. And I was sitting there looking at the wine list. And I looked down. I said, well, you know, it's a little bit hot outside. I'm going to do some light burrata. I'll do a Pinot Gris. And I looked down and an inexpensive Pinot Gris, $8, $8.99 a glass. I'm like, oh, that's not bad.
Yeah.
And so she came back over the table. She's like, oh, would you like 9 ounces instead of six? And of course I say, more? Sure. Yes. Pour more into my glass. We got our bill after two glasses of wine. And my wine bill was $30. Now, I wasn't drinking anything expensive. It was a relatively inexpensive Pinot Gris. And you look at that, and my husband had gotten a well-known bourbon on the rocks to sip on, and his bill was still only $12. So this, to me, people are not scared to spend money on what they want to drink. This isn't about voting with your dollars. This isn't people being in the poorhouse. This isn't people deciding they're not going to pay for it. They're just opting to spend for certainty and creativity. I think that the people in the restaurants, I think people who are working on the wine list, coupled with the creativity that's going on in cocktails, they have run themselves out on a rail. Because ultimately, we have overpriced our wine for so long that people now think an $18 cocktail that has mezcal and cannabis in it is a value.
Yeah.
That's what we have done to ourselves in the wine world. And it's going to take a while to come back. Here's the catch. We don't have restaurants. We don't have bars that are advocating coming back. Yes, you can go into your local watering hole Monday night, half-price wines by the glass. We can do Monday night, sin night. Restaurant industry, you go in, you can get a bottle for half price. But I think we've gone a little bit too far, and we're going to have to totally reinvent how we're doing wine list if we're going to get people back to drinking in restaurants.
Are restaurants getting this message, though?
No, that's what we're doing today. We're going to try and deliver it because ultimately, even though we aren't voting on whether we're having wine or having spirits, we are still drinking more wine. We are voting with our dollars what we're going to drink when we're out and what we appreciate. And we appreciate perceived value, not necessarily just throwing a list together anymore. Hey, we're going to take a quick break right here. When we return, we'll get more into why people are consuming more outside of the restaurant bailiwick.
Compare cars and save searches on Auto Trader. You'll get a text alert when Auto Trader finds your perfect match.
Nobody wants to get ripped off, broken into, or robbed, but nobody wants to pay a lot of money to have their home protected either.
I've got an offer to tell you about to provide home security for your home for a simple rate as low as $19.99 a month. For real, with no installation or equipment charges. And this is from a company rated number one by a leading consumer research company. According to the facts, most of you won't even call unless there's a burglary in your neighborhood or something bad happened. So let's give you a reason. Save money. For as low as $19.99 a month with no other costs, you can get your home secured. Plus, get a lifetime equipment replacement warranty. You need protection for your home. Call the Home Security Hotline right now.
Call 800-698-7191. 800-698-7191. 800-698-7191. Call now. That's 800-698-7191.
Do you use the expensive blue or yellow pills to charge your sex life? Are you thinking about it? What if we could promise you the same results for less than $3 a pill? If you're paying $20 a pill for the other pills, you're getting taken to the cleaners. Call OnCall Pharmacy right now and save as much as $700. 800-884-7919. OnCall Pharmacy delivers the exact same results for less than $3. You'll save more than $16 a pill for the same results. And right now, radio callers will get 44 blue or yellow pills for $120 with free discreet shipping. You can save more than $700 off pharmacy prices. Call OnCall Pharmacy now and take advantage of this special offer. 800-884-7919. Charge your sex life now and save a ton of money. Call now and get your 44 pills and save over $700 and qualify for free shipping. Stop overpaying and call right now. 800-884-7919. 800-884-7919. 800-884-7919.
This is the news. This morning, we are saluting the 2.2 million women who have joined in the war effort. They now make up 37% of the workforce, changing their role forever.
The prestigious Harvard Medical School is breaking ground today, opening its doors to new female applicants.
Today, little girls all over the world look to the sky, where the first woman is now in space.
Military stereotypes are challenged today with the trailblazing promotion of a U.S. female officer to four-star general. It was just announced that the vast majority of last year's doctorate degrees were earned by women.
We've come so far, but our news is changing for the worse. More women die from heart disease and stroke than men, even though it can be prevented. Make a change at GoRedForWomen.org today. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the American Heart Association's Go Red for Women.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the woods, just outside of town.
Oh, not surprising. You've got your home. Bears have theirs.
Yeah, but see, this wasn't just any bear. This bear was wearing jeans and a hat, as in a Smokey Bear.
Jeans and a hat. That's definitely Smokey. What exactly did he have to say?
Well, we were about to head home, you know, after having a bonfire.
Oh, I can guess where this is going.
Right, right. See, Smokey told me the fire wasn't actually out. He said if it's too hot to touch, it's too hot to leave.
That's true. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
Wow, no kidding?
I'm a forest ranger. We never kid.
Sorry.
that was a joke.
Oh.
If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
We missed you. Now it's more of the Wine Crush with Laura Lawson.
Welcome back to The Crush. I'm Laura Lawson. Okay, so before the break, we were discussing the high price of wine in restaurants. Well, actually, we hadn't gotten to fully discuss it yet. We were going to bring up this topic and let's really look at it. Ultimately, for years and years and years, when you go to restaurants and you have a bottle of wine, you are paying three times wholesale. So you are paying, if the bottle of wine wholesale is $20, you are buying that bottle of wine for $60. So that's how it works.
Here, and you mentioned this has been going on for 30 years.
Oh, at least. At least 30. I mean, I've been in the industry for over 40, and ultimately that's always been the standard. A markup is times three. Hmm. Well, here's why you can't get away with it anymore. Again, let's go back to the craft cocktail, craft beers. Yes, people are now charging $8, $9, $10 for beers. People are now charging $10, $12, $18 for cocktails, and people are paying it. When you're looking at wine, though, people have always paid $10, $12, $15, $20 for a glass of wine. Two differences come to mind. First and foremost, people are more cognizant these days about what they're drinking and getting behind a wheel, which is a very, very good thing. But people in the past, whereas they might go back, not back two cocktails before dinner and have a bottle of wine, ultimately they realize they don't want to be over legal limits, so they are slowing down their consumption. But in doing so, as we have approached the pricing aspect, every day, we discuss a new way to get wine delivered to your house. Ironically, you were talking about the Merlot and Mailbox Merlot. There's a great online community. You can have wine shipped to you. You've got wine discounters. You've got great stores like Aldi and Lidl coming into the United States where you're going in and you aren't paying that much. Whether you're looking at these mega marts, you're looking at your Sam's Clubs, you're looking at the box stores that are selling wine for almost cost. But yet, that same bottle, you go to a Sam's Club, you're going to pay $10 for Laura Lawson Chardonnay.
Mm-hmm.
When you go to a wine list and go to a restaurant, you're going to be paying $30 to $45 for that same bottle of wine. There's something wrong there.
Oh, yeah.
And I think
it doesn't take an expert to figure it out.
It does not take a math major to figure that out. And what happens is that's why you find a lot of restaurants who decide not to use national brands that people are comfortable with, that people know, that you can go into your local box stores and get, because I think the guilt or the lack of sales gets to them, so they find these unknown wines that they can go ahead and put the proper markup on. I understand restaurants have to make money. Why does it have to be at the expense of the grape? Why does the grape have to pay for their sins? I don't understand why we can't mark things up rationally so that people can go out, enjoy nice glasses of wine, enjoy nice company, and not feel like they're being gouged.
Well, here's another thing, too. You remember what buying wine was like in your grocery store 30 years ago? There wasn't, if there was any selection, there wasn't much.
No, you had the big 3 liters, 5 liters. You had Carlo Rossi. You had a whole bunch of strange imports that were in cool different bottles. But other than that, no, there wasn't the availability of it. That or you had the stuff you put in brown bags and sat on the corner.
Yeah.
So
people have gotten an education about wine.
They have. Now the whole concept needs to carry over to our restaurants. But it's not just the wine prices, I think, that are keeping people from drinking wine in restaurants. It may be ourselves that are shooting ourselves in the foot. I have something
for you. Like in what way?
All right. Another study was done, and it went into the top 35 worst restaurant faux pas ever. So people are saying that they are getting out of the restaurant business. Again, the restaurant people are finally looking at and realizing if they're going to lose 4% a month, they need to figure out where people are going and follow the people. Yeah. And ultimately, as they start studying it, they're looking at the pricing structures. But also, people basically are getting disgusted by other people. They don't want to deal with rude behavior. They don't want to deal with these people. So there was an article put out, and it talks about the top 35 worst restaurant faux pas. All the way
these
around.
Are things we do, that we commit.
These are things that we, the diner, do. And some of them, to me, are just asinine, and I think surely to God people don't do this, but others, I have to admit, I've been guilty and kind of go through them. All right, some of the obvious ones. Snapping your fingers to get the waiter's attention.
Oh, my gosh, I hate that.
Yeah, not only does it annoy other diners, it annoys the waiters. Not leaving a tip. Well, obviously, that's going to be annoying, but there are some restaurants that are known tipping. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, as far as the whole dining room, licking your knife. Now, why this comes up, I have no
licking
idea.
Licking your knife. I've never seen anyone do that. Besides me.
I may have. You cut your hamburger in half.
I did.
Have,
yeah.
Yes.
There's some gravy there. I don't want that to get away.
Texting at the table.
Uh-huh.
Letting children listen to videos on a phone. Letting children come and go as they please from the table. Yeah. If you read down this list, a lot of it has to do with children's behavior. So
exactly.
I think that's interesting.
Same thing at the movies. This is why people don't go to movies.
Yes. Asking this I don't really understand. Not sharing a sharing platter and eating more than your fair share. Go figure.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to take a quick break right here. When we return, we'll finally be joined by someone clever, Mr. Michael Keenan of Keenan Vineyards.
There's no one in the world quite like you. That's why your search for a car is more than just, well, a search for a car. It's about finding the perfect car for you. The right car to carry you on the journey to your dreams. At Auto Trader, you can compare new and used cars and save your searches along the way. Auto Trader will send you cars that match what you're looking for. And they'll even let you know when the price drops on a car you've saved. Auto Trader, the only car search engine driven by you.
Get peace of mind and a $100 Visa gift card free right now by calling Alliance Home Security. Have us install our home security system for free, sign up for our monitoring service, and get a $100 Visa gift card for free. No gimmicks. Call now and get your free Visa gift card. 1-800-505-3470. That's 1-800-505-3470. Ask us to install your home security system and get a $100 Visa gift card. 1-800-505-3470. Call right now.
When I grow up, I want to be a new pair of blue jeans.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's first computer.
When I grow up, I want to be a glass countertop in a new home.
When I grow up, I want to be a kid's best birthday present.
When I grow up, I want to be a football stadium.
When I grow up, I want to be a warm place on a cold day.
When I grow up, I want to be a fancy backsplash.
When I grow up, I want to be a bike that races around the country.
When I grow up, I want to be a bench on a forest trail.
When I grow up,
I want to be a rocking chair on
when
a sunny porch.
I want to be a skyscraper.
I want to be a...
I want to be a...
I want to be a...
I want to be
a... I want to be
a... I want to be
I want to be a...
When I grow up, I don't want to be a piece of garbage. And if you recycle me, I won't be.
Give your garbage another life. Recycle. Learn how at iwanttoberecycled.org. A public service advertisement brought to you by Keep America Beautiful and the Ad Council.
Unexpected reactions to smart financial decisions brought to you by feedthepig.org.
Well, I finally did it. My student loan is totally paid off.
I can't believe it.
I can't believe it either. I paid more than the minimum each month, and soon enough, it was gone.
So you're just giving up?
Giving up on what?
The life of luxury. Egyptian cotton, caviar Thursdays, designer everything.
What are you talking about?
Our plan. What happened to winning the lottery and mastering the art of the perfect mimosa? Hosting galas, wearing enough jewelry to require a bodyguard, vacationing in the French Riviera, and then buying it.
I just thought maybe it was time to prepare for my future. You know, set some financial goals, make some smart investments, open a 401k.
Financial goals? Investments? A 401k? You are horrifying right now. Listen, if winning the lottery were easy, everyone would do it.
When it comes to financial stability, don't get left behind. Get tools and tips for saving at feedthepig.org. This message brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
On the next episode of Recipes for Disaster.
So we've got our neighbor Paul coming over tonight for a barbecue, which is why I prepared a delicious lemon rosemary steak marinade from my special collection of old family recipes. To make sure the steaks are extra, extra, extra tender, I left them marinating out on the counter overnight, just like Nana used to.
Maria may mean well, but without food safety, it never ends well. Always thaw or marinate foods in the refrigerator at 40 degrees Fahrenheit or below, or you could make your friends and family really sick. Maria's neighbor Paul didn't think twice about the steak he ate until he was presenting his company's financial forecast to the board. That's when a sudden bout of food poisoning made it explicitly clear that profits weren't the only thing on the rise. Watch Recipes for Disaster at foodsafety.gov. You'll learn the right steps as Maria does everything wrong. Brought to you by the USDA, HHS, and the Ad Council.
All right, welcome back to The Wine Crush. I am Laura Lawson, and right now it is my pleasure to introduce one of my favorite guests because, to me, he always epitomizes the word clever, and that's a word we haven't seen in the wine business in a while, and honestly, of all the words we bandy about, it needs to be one we use more often. So keeping that in mind, it is my pleasure to welcome back Mr. Michael Keenan. Michael, welcome back to The Wine Crush.
Well, thank you, Laura. It's a lovely introduction.
I mean it sincerely. You should hear some of the people I've been talking to over the past 2 weeks, not including Kent there in the booth. But ultimately, clever seems to be a word that doesn't apply to anyone. And I think if anybody in the wine business and anything you've been doing, clever is definitely you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
I will never forget. I know I talk about this every time you and I get together, but forever you will be my hero over Mailbox Merlot. So because of that, it will stick with you eternally, and it will always be one of my favorites.
Well, it's a story that just kind of made itself.
It's perfect. Well, listen, for our listeners who haven't had the pleasure of knowing Michael Keenan or your amazing wines, why don't you give us a little bit of background on you, what you're doing these days, and how things are going up on Spring Mountain?
Well, we are just about to start, and by just about, I mean tomorrow morning, picking our first pick of our 41st vintage on Spring Mountain. So we've been up here since, 1977 was our first harvest when my father and I worked together, back when there was nobody up here on Spring Mountain, which is a mountainous area above the city of St. Helena in the western mountains of Napa, the Mayacamas Mountains that separate Napa from Sonoma. So we've got some history up here, as did the Conradis who built our winery originally at the end of the 19th century and farmed primarily Zinfandel up here for about 30 or 40 years and then closed up shop during Prohibition. And then the winery was fallow for roughly 44 years, so my father purchased it and we began to plant Bordeaux varietals and start a whole new tack.
Well, I love the fact, ultimately, you have me almost speechless, I have to be honest with you, because I've been sitting here and math is not my strong point. As I do the math and you're saying 41st vintage, then I'm mentally trying to go through like, my God, how long have I known Michael? And then I come up with the number and I think, nah, that's not possible. I'm not that old. So this is where I'm going back and going over. But ultimately, congratulations, 41 vintages. That's absolutely amazing. Yeah. I have to admit, if someone had said something to me, I'd say, well, they might be closing in on their 30th. I did not know we had been that expansive.
No, Dad was a pioneer and came up here in 1970. Actually, he bought the property in 1974 when the wine business in Napa was a relatively sleepy concern compared to the thing that it is today. And back when you could drive up and down the valley without having getting stuck in a traffic jam.
Or you actually drive up and down the valley instead of just sit there and park.
Yeah, and the hottest restaurant was Mary's Cafe in St. Helena that didn't even do dinner.
And didn't have anyone to actually sell to. But no, it's funny. We've had guests on recently, and I'm not discrediting them by any stretch of the imagination. You know, whether it's the second, third, and young generations that are building things in their garages, and they're putting this together, they're putting this wine club, and they have a very pioneering attitude. And that's why it's refreshing to speak to you about you and what your dad did, because ultimately taking gambles, you know, getting out of the construction business, getting out of contracting, to come up and say, hey, I'm going to find this piece of land, I'm going to dig it up and I'm going to do it. It just, that's amazing. To me, that's the pedigree that all of Napa wishes they had.
Well, thank you. It is still a labor of love. And if you get this business in your blood or under your skin, it's all you want to do.
Well, ultimately, that's what it comes down to. And that holds true for this whole industry, not just on your side, but all of us. Once you get in the wine business, you either get in and you have about 3 years, realize you're insane and go into pharmaceuticals on one side or the other, or two, you're crazy enough to stay in it.
Right, and just take the pharmaceuticals and
hey, someone's got to keep the pharmaceutical companies in business. One way or the other, it might as well be the wine people.
Right.
All right, so all joking aside, you are getting ready to start harvest tomorrow. How's it looking? You get so many mixed reviews right now, people that are worried about their Sauvignon Blanc. It's too hot. It's too ripe. It's too this. What are you thinking as you look out over your vineyards?
Well, I wish it wasn't as hot as it is right now. This is a little concerning. We've had a great summer. We had actually a kind of a mild August, and then things were moving along nice and slowly, and then last weekend the temperatures really jumped up, and this weekend they're going through the roof. And it'll be as hot here today and tomorrow as I've ever seen it since I've been up here. So that's not a super recipe for a perfect vintage. So
no. Are you going to try and pick early? We had someone on the show last week that was discussing the fact that they're going to have to get up at 2:30 in the morning and try and pick cool. Is that something you're going to try and do just to get the grapes in, or just see what happens?
No, we'll start at 5:30 like we usually do. In mountain terrain such as we have, it's really out of the question to be picking at night. It's too steep, and it's just not safe enough. Plus, I don't think it makes a difference.
And you look at the liability. You like all your employees and your workers not to have broken ankles, sprained ankles, or bitten ankles at that point.
Yeah, plus there's not much difference between the ripeness at 2:30 in the morning and the ripeness at 5:30 or 6. If the sugars aren't really changing and the acids aren't changing that fast, which they can't really, the only difference is your perception of the flavors. If the fruit's warmer, you perceive the sugars more and the acids less. But once you get that into the cellar and you cool it down, then it tastes normal. So picking at night to me doesn't have any advantages anyway.
But so you're the first one to apply common sense to that. I keep asking that question. I always figured it was a case of that's the only time they could get people out to pick because everyone else was going to go ahead and be picking at 5:30 in the morning.
No.
All right. So I know that's a little bit evil. So what are you picking first? Are you picking Cabernet Merlot, Cabernet Franc? What do you have your sights on for to go ahead and get into the winery?
We're picking Zinfandel tomorrow.
All right.
Because it's growing on what we call the Point Vineyard, which is the warmest vineyard on the property. It faces southeast, very steep, incredibly rocky. And whatever we grow there, we've actually had Merlot on there for 20 years before we changed it about 10 years ago. Whatever we plant there is going to come in first. And then, so we'll pick that Saturday, and then we'll start picking Chardonnay on Monday.
Now, last time I read, your winery was 48 acres. Are you still at 48 acres, or have you expanded?
No, it's still the same.
Perfect. So, see, what's great about that is you've got a loyal crew. You know what grapes are there. You know what you're doing. You know when it's coming in. So it's almost old hat and habit to you at this point. There shouldn't be any surprises, correct?
Well, it never gets old, and there's always a little surprise. So, thank God. But, yeah, the advantage of having an estate model, which was my father's goal, is that we know the property, and we learn how to really perfect it. And over time, figure out, you know, maybe this shouldn't be growing here. I mean, it took me 10 or 12 years to realize that the Point Vineyard wasn't a good Merlot site, even though it was so beautiful, and the Merlot vines were the only ones that survived phylloxera in the 80s and 90s, and the trunks were so old and gnarly, it was so pretty to walk in, but visually beautiful. But it took me a long time to realize, hey, this is too warm for Merlot. And now we've got Zinfandel in the bottom half, and we've got Cabernet in the top half, and they both seem to really thrive there, so... the advantage of owning the property and learning how to perfect it over time.
Well, I like that. And see, one thing I do like, too, is your flexibility. One time when you and I spoke, you hadn't even started doing Zinfandel. And I spoke to you 3 years later, and you had been convinced. You had become a convert into the Zinfandel world and have embraced it ever since. And I think it's great because you look at people and you talk about mountain property, and the moment you say mountain, someone says Cabernet, someone says Cabernet Franc, and that's the end of that. The fact that you're flexible enough to think about, hey, this is hot, this is great, I need to put this vine here, that's when, by embracing Zinfandel, you show that you really care about your estate, your wines, and what's coming out next that actually has Keenan on the bottle.
Yeah, well, I got to give Jerry Sepp a lot of credit here, because he's the one who really changed my mind about what Zinfandel could be, which I never had much of an opinion of. You know, I grew up drinking, you know, Bordeaux wines and Burgundy wines, and to me, Zinfandel just wasn't that interesting. But met Jerry pretty early on in my tenure here, and tasted his Mountains Inns. They're a little bit north of us, and thought, oh my God, I had no idea. And then coupled with the fact that it's our grape of history here in Napa, really kind of sparked my interest to see what we could do here, and it made me think about what they did here 120 years ago. So it's kind of amazing to me now that I think I'm the only person on String Mountain making an estate Zinfandel.
I would say pretty much that you probably are. Hey, Michael, we need to take a quick break right here. When we come back, I do want to pick up talking about your estate and talking about what's going on with Zin. So hang on, and to our listeners, we'll have more of Michael Keenan right after this.
Compare cars and save searches on Auto Trader. You'll get a text alert when Auto Trader finds your perfect match.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then call Page Publishing ASAP. We're looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to us. And we'll give you our feedback. And if we like what we read, we will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. We handle everything. Editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or a biography and want to get it published, call Page Publishing now for your free author submission kit. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with this simple phone call.
800-296-1294. 800-296-1294. 800-296-1294. Once again, that's 800-296-1294.
The IRS is the most feared agency in the world. You've heard ads from other companies offering to help taxpayers only if they owe over $10,000. Here at Platinum Tax Defenders, we're A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau, and we're proud to be one of the only tax firms in the country who understands that people who owe less than $10,000 need help just as badly. The IRS doesn't care how much money you owe. They'll still garnish your wages and even seize your assets. So whether you owe just a few thousand dollars or hundreds of thousands, call now for your free tax consultation. If you qualify, we may even be able to reduce your tax debt down to a small fraction of what you owe. So don't wait until the IRS seizes your property and garnishes your wages. Call 800-856-1330 and get your tax problem resolved once and for all. That number again is 800-856-1330. 800-856-1330.
Welcome back to The Catch Show. Up next, we have Nico. Nico is a member of the Shelter Pet Group.
That's right. A group known especially for their sunspot sleeping, ball chasing, leg rubbing, couch purring, bed leaping, and of course, companionship.
Wonderful. And what breed would you say Nico is?
I'd have to go with a tabbyish Persian kind of mix.
Tremendous cat.
I'd also like to point out her coat's wonderful mix of colors. Is it black, gray, gray-black, brown?
Somewhere in between.
Indeed.
You know, it's always special when we get to see a cat like this.
Just look how she struts.
It's like she owns the place.
And how she's so incredibly cute in her indifference to commands.
A strong-willed feline.
Ah, and see how she curls up and cuddles her person.
The pitch on her purring is simply perfect.
Nice one.
I know. Fantastic cat.
Fantastic indeed. But really the best way to know an amazing shelter pet like Nico is to meet one.
Visit theshelterpetproject.org today. Adopt. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson. We are mid-conversation with one of my favorite winemakers to talk about vineyards, to talk about vines, and of course the cleverness that tends to go into all his productions, Mr. Michael Keenan. Michael, are you still with us?
I am. Yes, I am.
I mean, I'm dead serious about the clever word. We're just going to have to put that on. In fact, it was I found something on you that I hadn't seen before. What was the quote? That your favorite thing is being treated like a conquering hero when you travel, and your biggest challenge was not being treated that way at home. And I thought, that's clever. How many people get that?
You must have read my biography on the Napa Valley Vineyards Association's website.
I did. I have to admit, it was funny. And that's one of the reasons why I reached out and I thought I hadn't heard about Mailbox Merlot. I was looking at the Napa Valley Vintners, and also I was looking at Napa Green and thinking, well, I haven't seen Michael. I haven't talked to him. I want to see what he's doing. So I came across that and I thought, this is perfect timing. And by all means, you will always be a conquering hero to us here at the Wine Crush.
Oh, thanks.
Well, as long as we're on that, obviously you've got great things going. You're getting ready for harvest, but you are spearheading something that I am interested in. I know a lot of other people are. What is Napa Green, and how passionate are you about this project?
Well, Napa Green essentially is the county or the whatever association is doing it as a way to sponsor, you know, the proper stewardship of the land, and they've set out some pretty good guidelines. And I think the number one is taking care of the waterways that run through the mountains and through the valley. So it's all about farming without erosion and keeping things as clean as possible. And we were one of the first ones to enroll and get certified in the program. In fact, I love telling this amusing anecdote. When they came up to check us out, we were already doing everything. And they said, well, you're all good to go as far as what you do in the vineyards, but you just have to nail up about 10 bluebird boxes and an owl box. And I looked at the guy, and I was an amateur ornithologist when I was young. In fact, I started a program in high school. It was my main interest when I was 18 years old. And I said to the guy, you know, we've got 130 acres of forest here and roughly 50 acres of vines and four zones interspersed throughout the forest. You know, the birds are pretty good at making their own nests. I don't think we need to do that. And the guy looked at me and he goes, hey, it's on the form here. I got to check it off. See? Okay, fine.
Check off your little boxes, paint them blue, put them to a tree. And there's half people that probably feel guilty about nailing it into the tree to begin with.
Yeah, and the owl box is the funniest one because it's a white box on top of about a 30-foot stainless steel pole that it's right between the Chardonnay vineyard and our garden. And we lovingly nicknamed it the owl oven immediately because it's got to be 150 degrees in there on a sunny day. And there's no right-thinking bird in their mind would go in there and cook their children in there. It's just ridiculous.
You could have poached eggs while you're sitting up there.
Yeah, no, that's not going to happen.
I mean, my God. Hey, but you know what? You got to appreciate people. You know it started somewhere with good intentions to go ahead and give back. But yes, there is our Allery.
We're proud to be one of the first that did it, and it's a great idea.
Well, obviously, Keenan Vineyards, what you're doing is amazing, and I want to talk about that. But I've got a question, because you made a statement that I don't know. I was listening. You were talking about sustainability, keeping things green. But then you said farming without erosion. And I was waiting for that sentence to end in farming without irrigation, farming without sulfites. What is farming without erosion?
Well, it means that we're not through the process of what we do, you know, dumping sediment into the creek. So the biggest change we made, this is about 22 years ago, was when we replanted our mountain terraced Cabernet vines because of phylloxera in the middle of the middle to late 90s. We actually took out the terracing, graded the hill, you know, in a plane, smooth again, and then planted the vines straight down the hill, and then had a water bar on a diagonal every 20 paces, and then an underground drainage system. So if there was any erosion, it would go into these tubes. They'd be carried to a filter pond at the bottom, and then whatever would leave that filter pond would be clean, filtered water to go back into the creek. And by doing this process, we can now grow a cover crop over the entire acreage. And with that cover crop being mature now, we absorb more rainwater during the rainy season. We retain more of it because of the insulation blanket of the mown cover crop. We no longer till the soil like we used to do every other year. So the soil now is its own natural living organism that's kind of complete, and there's no erosion.
And your neighbors below you appreciate it. There's no awful runoff. There's nothing coming across their driveways into their vines or any place there shouldn't be.
It's a huge breakthrough in mountain farming that, I mean, historically, people who farmed in the mountains are people who got to the valley too late and all the good land was taken. So they had to go up into the mountains and try to recreate the valley experience by cutting a terrace and then stepping up on a vertical face and then cutting another, you know, level bench, then stepping up. And those vertical steps would always erode. And also just working on the mountain, going up and down, it's just a lot tougher. And eventually stuff, you know, washes downhill into the creek. And now we can farm in a way that doesn't happen, and it's amazing.
And better for everybody involved.
Yeah.
Stepping away from that, obviously you're known for Merlots, Cabernets, Cabernet Francs, Zinfandels now. Are we still doing Mernay? Do you do Mernay at all anymore?
Yeah, I've made it every year since 1999. So, yeah, that is my signature blend.
I always thought that would take on, that someone would want to, that you would need to trademark or clone that name because it just made sense, particularly with American palate. For our listeners, what is Mernay and how do you put it together?
Well, Mernay is spelled M-E-R for Merlot and N-E-T for Cabernet. So it's literally describes a wine that's half Merlot and half Cabernet Sauvignon. And in addition to the literal aspect of the name, three letters from each word, the name to me has a lyrical facet in that the name Mernay has a pretty sound to me. And that pretty ring in my ear of that word matches how that wine smells and tastes. So even though it's half Merlot and half Cabernet Sauvignon, the wine is all about Merlot. And the Cabernet Sauvignon half acts like the catalyst to bring out the prettiest aspect of Merlot, its feminine side. The high-toned, perfumed fruit that you get in the nose that has a real sweet smell to it that carries right through the palate, that's the sort of the beautiful, what we call sweet spot of the wine. And that's its trademark.
And here I thought you were going to say high maintenance and be referring to me again. See, this goes back to why I think you're clever, because you discuss winemaking with a lot of people. They talk about, we're going to put this label on the bottle because it's evocative of what's in the bottle. You are the first person I've ever heard that says, well, I like the lyrical sound of the actual name because it resonates and matches the beauty and the flavors in the bottle. See, you've got the whole picture together. You've got all three corners of this taken off.
Yeah. And I also make another wine that's half Merlot and half Cabernet Franc, actually, that I keep a secret. And that wine is also all about Merlot. And sort of ironically, the Cabernet Franc acts like the catalyst that brings out the masculine side of Merlot. And you'd think that it would be the opposite. You'd think that Merlot blended with Cabernet Sauvignon would be the masculine wine, and Merlot with the Cabernet Franc would be the more feminine wine, but it's the opposite.
Well, hey, Cabernet Franc, to me, that's been my new passionate grape. It definitely does some great things. Well, Michael, it has been so good to talk to you and have you on the show. I'm excited to see what's going to come out of 2017 for you. Hopefully, your harvest will harbor no surprises for you tomorrow. And I promise it won't be this long until we talk again. I'll give you a call in February, see how it went, and see what kind of trouble you got into.
Absolutely. I look forward to it, Laura. Thanks a lot.
All right, Michael, you take care. For our listeners, after this, we are going to wrap up the show and let you know what we have coming up in the upcoming fall episodes.
Need a wine recommendation for a party? Want Laura to address something on the show? Email her at lauralawson@winecrush.com. There's no one in the world quite like you. That's why your search for a car is more than just, well, a search for a car. It's about finding the perfect car for you. The right car to carry you on the journey to your dreams. At Auto Trader, you can compare new and used cars and save your searches along the way. Auto Trader will send you cars that match what you're looking for. And they'll even let you know when the price drops on a car you've saved. Auto Trader, the only car search engine driven by you.
Do you use the expensive blue or yellow pills to charge your sex life? Are you thinking about it? What if we can promise you the same results for less than $3 a pill? If you're paying $20 a pill for the other pills, you're getting taken to the cleaners. Our pills deliver the exact same results for less than $3. You'll save more than $16 a pill for the same results. And right now, radio callers will get 44 blue or yellow pills for $120 with free discreet shipping. You can save more than $700 off pharmacy prices. Charge your sex life now and save a ton of money. Call now and get your 44 pills and save over $700 and qualify for free shipping. Stop overpaying and call right now.
800-605-1682. 800-605-1682. 800-605-1682. That's 800-605-1682.
Curious about owning physical gold? Gulf Coast Gold and Silver is offering a free guide in investing in precious metals. Silver and gold have historically been safe havens and excellent hedges in any serious investor's portfolio. The time is now. Get your free guide to investing in precious metals. Call 800-756-3744. Again, 800-756-3744. Our gold advisors are standing by.
As I went through school, one giant question loomed over me. What did I want to be? But in order to know what I wanted to be, I had to first decide what I wanted to make. I wanted to make more, so I became a teacher. Now I make learning a privilege, not a chore, and frustration a tool, not an obstacle. I make working hard seem easy, and giving up impossible. I make an old subject feel like a fresh thought, and unconventional methods common. I make material things less important, and little things like patience and kindness count. I make weekdays more exciting than weekends, and classrooms feel like anything but. I make things different, which is all I ever hoped for. I'm a teacher. I make more.
Find out how you can make more at teach.org. Make more. Teach. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
It is always so much fun to have that kind of guest on The Crush. Michael Keenan, hats off to him, wishing him best of luck in his harvest as he gets started. God knows those mountains are always fun. Well, certainly on The Crush, we've had an exciting day. Hope, like me, you have figured out it was a clever show, because I think if anything has dictated it from top to bottom, we are working on clever. Well, do want to hear from you. Let us know what your thoughts are as you move into fall. Call us 877-4-CRUSH-1. Email me, Laura Lawson at winecrush.com. As always, here on The Crush, reminding you to sip socially, to drink responsibly, to drink what you like, not what you're told, but most importantly, in vino veritas, in wine, there's truth. I'm Laura Lawson, and I'll talk with you next week.